Welcome to Doctor's Orders with your host, Dr. Baker. Now let's join today's program.
Hello, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us on this Monday. I am really excited to be in front of you today. This is Doctor's Orders. I am Dr. Baker of the Business Hospital, the one and only business hospital in the world, where we service 14 countries with what we call as business treatment. I know for many of you out there listening, this is the first time that you would have heard of a business hospital. And one reason is because I invented the industry, because I believe that there was a better way to treat businesses. And when I say treat businesses, just like you treat your body, your business needs treatment. And our goal and my personal goal is to make your business healthier. And we're going to do that on this show. So once again, thank you so much for joining us, whether you're joining us on 1320thevoice.com via stream, or you're listening to us over the airways. Thank you. I want your participation. Our goal is to help businesses in real time, treat you with whatever ailment you may have. And so when we say ailment, if you are struggling or suffering at any level with your business, it could be legal concerns, it could be marketing, it could be investment or fundraising, it could be human resources, the issue itself is irrelevant. You are at the right place, you are at the hospital, and our job is to make sure that you get the best treatment possible. So please, if you have any questions, if you need any assistance, our call-in number is 859-291-2255. And if you just want to highlight your business, if you want to ask questions about your business, please don't hesitate to call. Our only function is to help your business succeed and to make sure that your business is as healthy as possible. And with that being said, I want to lay down some ground rules before I introduce today's guest, who's going to be helping me today provide some treatment to you guys over the air, is that we are going to have a theme every single day. So today is Monday, and that's Market Mondays. And in Market Mondays, we're going to look at different industries that affect small business. We're also going to look at market initiatives or marketing initiatives. So every Monday, tune in for Market Mondays. Tuesdays is going to be Tech Tuesdays. We're going to talk high-level technology. And so whether you're a tech person or consider yourself a techie, or if you're afraid of technology, either way, our job is to help you understand technology better in a more profound way that you can use it to benefit your business and your personal livelihoods. Wednesday is Worldwide Wednesday. And Wednesday, we're going to take a look at what international markets do for us, how do we participate in a global economy, and then how your small business is affected and can also participate in the world of things. Thursday is Trending Thursday, and this is more or less our gumbo way of saying we're going to talk about anything that's trending. You'll have a lot of current events that will happen on Thursdays. We'll also pull out specialized industries that may not get enough attention and then that may be trending up. So if you ever heard of terms like NFT, or if you want to learn more about CBD, we will be talking about those realities on Thursdays, which is Trending Thursday. And then probably my favorite, which I'm hoping is your favorite, are Fridays. We're looking at Financial Fridays, and we're going to talk to you about money. What's really funny about money, and we're going to talk about this when we get to Friday, is that we all handle money, but many of us have no idea what it even means. And when I say what does it even mean, from a business owner to an individual, how should you make money? How should you save money? How should you protect your assets? Where should you put how do you build your portfolios? How do you run your business? On and on and on. Financial Friday, we are going to give you the key right over the air as to how to make more money, keep more of it, and become more financially healthy. So with all that being said, I want to introduce today's guest, which is a dear friend of mine, but also one of the smartest entrepreneurs that I know in the world. This is Cole Reynolds of Reynolds Law. Cole, how you doing?
Great, Dr. Baker. Thank you so much for having me on. I am excited to be here. I have been anxiously awaiting for you to kick off Doctor's Orders, and I'm super happy to be joining you on today's episode.
Fantastic. I'm going to let the world know a little bit about Doctor's Orders in a way that they may not know. This entire project was literally birthed and conceived by Cole Reynolds. We were having a very important business meeting, and he looked at me and he said, you know what? You should go and treat people on the air. And I said, no way. And he said, Doc, you sure should. And that was about a year ago that we made the declaration that we would treat businesses on there. So I thank you, Cole Reynolds, for number one, birthing the idea at a level that forced us to create action, but then being with me every step of the way to make sure that it came to fruition.
Well, look, Doc, I've seen you treat so many patients, both patients that we've been working on together, patients that you've been treating independently, patients that have been treated through other wings of your hospital, and I saw so much success time after time after time. I said, man, the only limiting factor of the impact that Dr. Baker and his team can make is how many people hear him. So as soon as that came to me, I had to sort of hold your feet to the fire and say, hey, you've got to take this out in a format that can help more people. And I'm super proud of you and your team for all the work to bring us to this point. Like I said, I'm happy to be joining you.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for that. And I want to jump off really quickly because you're a lawyer by traditional trade. That's your formal training. But you're also a serial entrepreneur, which is a word I hate, but I fully understand it. Now, you might say, what in the heck, Doc? What do you mean you hate serial entrepreneur? Is that people are using that term in such a way that it's diluted what it actually means. Most people are just doing a bunch of stuff, junk, and things, and they call themselves serial entrepreneurs. That's not what we're talking about. Cole, you've actually built some very successful businesses. Your family has built successful businesses, and you haven't had, you know, one run at it. You've had many runs at it in many different industries that allows you to be an expert. Am I correct in saying that?
Yeah, I think so. That's probably a more generous introduction than I would give myself. But my better friends who know me well would call me an entrepreneur who happens to be a lawyer. So some background on that. I guess I'm what you would call a non-traditional lawyer in that I've been building businesses longer than I've been practicing law. My law firm just happens to be one of those businesses. And what I think is unique maybe about me, my family, my team, what we've been doing, we've been very, very deliberate to expand the scale of our operations into, in some ways, tangential businesses that feel very much aligned with what we're already doing, and in other ways, completely diversified businesses that feel totally different than anything we've done before. The consistent thing is, and this is our philosophy, we have to be able to bet on ourselves and plan for our successes. So there's no throwing anything against the wall to see what sticks. We've been very, very deliberate. I don't know how many businesses I've built in my career, Dr. Baker. It's probably too many to count. There have certainly been some successes. I won't call any of them failures, just experiences where we learned something. But at the end of it now, I'm at this point where almost every client that I talk to and every patient of yours that I talk to, you and I should be able to say, hey, we get it because we've been there, and here's how we dealt with it, and here's how we handled it. Or alternatively, here's the dozens of other people that we've been serving over the past many, many years or decades, and we know how to navigate this because we've helped your peers navigate.
You just talked about something that was really important. I want to jump in and make sure I don't lose it. Is you talked about the fact that not only have you been classically or formally trained in a skill set that allows you to see multiple businesses, which is your legal practice, but you've also done these things. And when I say you've done them, you failed at some, you've succeeded at others, but you've also helped numerous other businesses in the same realm. These are the types of experiences that when I talk about someone being an expert in their field, that's what qualifies you to be an expert, is that there's a multifaceted approach as to how you see that business. You sharpen your skill set, and therefore that niche becomes so strengthened, so powerful, that when you see a business that's struggling in a lane, you can say, pick the aspect, I can help you with it. And it's clear that that's what you've been able to do. And obviously, we've been able to piggyback on one another with that. But you've been able to do that now for years, correct?
Yeah, that's right. And I think the biggest thing that we talk about within Reynolds Law is the ability to speak the entrepreneurial language, which allows us to better provide quick, efficient, and accurate legal services, right? So here's what I mean by that. If a client comes to us and says, hey, we're wrestling with this big decision, or we're navigating this important contract, and here are the things that are important to me. We need to maximize profitability, or we need to diversify our production lines, or we need redundancy over here. These are all concepts that are very, very much native to us as entrepreneurs. So we say, we get it. And that's the number one complaint that I think most clients have with the people that are out there trying to help them, is they have to do an enormous amount of education about the goals, the desires, the interests before they can get the help that they need. But not typically with us, because as soon as we hear the need, we go, this makes sense because we've been there. We've seen that. You don't need to teach me what your objectives are and what your goals are. You just need to tell me, and now let me join you and try to accomplish them with you.
Well, you know what? That brings me to a point that I run into all the time. This reminds me of a story of a company out of California that was a potential patient. They were not my patient, but we were going through the assessment process and a diagnosis. And one of their questions was, well, how good are you in the education sector? My response to them was, how good are you in the education sector? I know the other realities that you're suffering in, but you have to be really good in your space. So when you talk about the things that you've seen, it's not your job as a lawyer to then operate their business for them. It's to make sure that legally they're sound in their space. Is that right?
Yeah, you got it. And a lot of the things that we're doing for one client are going to be very, very similar to what we're doing to the other, right? So there are some basic core functionality that every business kind of needs to be aspiring to in terms of the way they're legally protected to mitigate their risk. But you're right. We aren't going to necessarily come alongside and tell you whether your idea will work, whether it will fail, whether it's going to be a great one, a single, a double, a home run. That's not for us to decide. What we will say is, let's come alongside you and provide high quality services in our lane. And let's do that incredibly efficiently because we understand what you're trying to accomplish. We know what we have to do, what we might say it's not the right time to do. And then we'll package that together in a way that can support them while they're building it. And to that point, sometimes we don't know if it's going to be a single, a double, or a home run. I've got a quick story. I had a young lady approach me not long ago and said, hey, I'm really interested in opening a taxi service in a kind of a major metro area. And I said, a taxi service? Wow, I haven't heard a whole lot about new taxi services in a while. Hey, have you heard of Uber and Lyft? And she said, no. She said, no, I haven't. And I said, all right, well, let's get your taxi service formed. And you know what? She is succeeding. Now, who am I to say, hey, that's not a good business idea? Because every entrepreneur, every small business owner, if they have the ability and the passion and the drive to go out and serve a market that needs their services, they're going to find a way. So instead of saying, hey, I want to squash that dream, right? I said, let me figure out how to help you the best that I can. Now, you've got to either go build it or fail at it. That's on you, but I'm going to support you nonetheless. I'm sure
well, you know what?
It's
amazing. I have. And you just reminded me of a commercial that I saw the other day. For all you listeners, I don't watch much television, but when I do, I pay more attention to the commercials than the programming. And there's one commercial that talks about generation gap. It's a game show, and it's got a bunch of old people and a bunch of young people on it, and they're battling because neither one of them understand the generation beforehand. And I just specifically remember the question is that they showed an image of the Three Stooges. So maybe I'm dating myself because I fully know Curly, Moe, and Shemp. You know, I fully know who that is. But for them, they didn't. And so the children was like, I have no idea who they are. Well, they flipped it and they showed TikTok to an older generation, and the lady had no idea what TikTok was. And I thought it was amazing because we tend to believe that our world, however we perceive that world, is the only world, and it isn't. And since you do work internationally and I do as well, we both come to learn that there'll be some things that shock you that we take for granted, especially here in the U.S. and actually doing business across multiple sectors, that this woman that says, I want a taxi service sounds ludicrous to some, but she actually is built appropriately, structured accordingly, and she hits the people she's supposed to hit. She could actually have a successful taxi service in the world of Uber and Lyft. Am I wrong in saying that?
No, you're exactly right. So my question back to you is, how do we keep that forefront in our minds, right? Is it just a function of helping enough taxi services and watching them succeed that we get the realization that, hey, just if it doesn't necessarily make sense to us or it doesn't make sense through this lens, it might make sense through that lens? I've seen you navigate that, Dr. Baker, with clients before who they don't even actually know what lens to be looking at their own business through. And you can say, hey, hold on, have you thought about it this way? What is that function? Is it just a function of been there, done that? Because you've been at this a long time.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's a scenario where everyone is being seduced by so many different things that when I see it, I can see the comprehensive nature of whatever it is that they're looking to accomplish, whereas others are being pulled away by sensationalism. And let me qualify what I'm saying. I work with a lot of accelerators, incubators, and for the listening world, accelerators are organizations or entities that speed up the process of launching for innovative ideas, if you will. Well, in that case, every new founder or startup founder that says, you know, I've got the greatest idea since sliced bread, and I'm gonna make $100 million, $1 billion, $1 trillion, right? They go out there and they wanna make all the money. But I look at them and I say, what happens if you just make $60,000 a year, you was able to take care of your family and send your kids to school? Would that be a benefit to you? And every time I do that, they look at me like, what are you talking about? Why would that ever be my dream? Well, it's not so much that it's your dream, but it's the reality. You're a business owner. What's real versus what isn't? But we see so much on social media. We hear so much from our constituents and people within our close circles that we start believing things that are sensationalized and not necessarily real. So when I'm looking at their businesses, I'm not looking to see if they have hyper growth potential all the time. Sometimes we just need to know, can it work? Can you execute it? Do you have the right resources? And can you do it for a long time successfully? That becomes the metric, not all of the hopes, wishes, and dreams. So hopefully that helps qualify a little bit of even my positioning when I'm looking at these businesses saying, can they make a run at it?
Well, I mean, it's super interesting. We've talked before kind of about this, where we work with startups, we work with entrepreneurs, we work with people that I will affectionately refer to as the unicorn chasers, right? These are the people who they spend their time in the literature, in the podcasts, watching YouTube videos about those founders who built those unicorn companies, right? We all know what those unicorn companies are, the big hyperscale, hypergrowth Facebooks and Twitters and TikToks, you name it, right? And what we see is we see a disproportionate amount of young entrepreneurs chasing that and maybe foregoing different entrepreneurial opportunities, which I will admit do not have the same potential upside, but they've got a much greater likelihood of finding the upside that they do have, right? So how many times have we talked about the young entrepreneur who says, hey, what are you working on? And they go, I'm building the app, right? Or I'm figuring out the SaaS model, or I'm figuring out the shared services model. We go, okay, great. Well, hey, there's a dry cleaner on the corner that has been there for 33 years and has never made less than $100,000 a year for its owner by doing the tried and true business principles of delivering a service that people need at a fair value at a reasonable price. Now, we can't say that one is better than the other, but what I can say is it is those dry cleaners on the corner that are making our world go round, because we don't interact with the unicorns near as much as we interact with those companies. And you know what? There's a heck of a lot of unicorn chasers that find themselves in a very difficult position after years and years of chasing that unicorn, which is elusive and hard to find, and might look back and say, man, I should have been thinking about buying that dry cleaner instead.
Well, and I would add to that, because I think the point's fantastic, but it's even building your unicorn out as the dry cleaners and then scaling it appropriately as you go. See, if you've got unlimited resources, which we know that unlimited is really an oxymoron, but if you've got a really large budget, let's call it that way, and you've got a vast network, and that network is tried and true, and they've been able to have turnkey solutions that allow you to get to market faster and execute quicker, then by all means, that may be the path. But if it isn't, and you're a first-generation owner, or you're a first-generation, you know, college student, well, those realities of unicorns become more difficult. We're not saying they're impossible, but we are saying they're more difficult. But what's more pragmatic is the dry cleaners. It's that method. It's, do I build something that earns me revenue in a way that's sustainable based on my skill set And the more I learn and the bigger my team gets and the more sound my business practices are, the more I can grow this business into something that becomes a game changer, a market share shifter, on and on. And I think we forget those things. I want to pause here for one moment because I want to make sure that I get identifications out to some of our sponsors. And so this particular segment here is sponsored by Pro Elite Training. Everybody out there listening right now, Pro Elite Training is the patented way to train to music. Music has been infused with working out since time began. It literally goes together like peanut butter and jelly. Well, Pro Elite Training allows you to learn a dribble combo if you're a basketball enthusiast, helps you with functional movement if you want to run better, three-punch combination if you want to learn self-defense or box. Any sport that you want to learn and increase your skill set in, Pro Elite Training can do that. Download it today on your Google Store or your Play apps. You can go in there and be able to download it. It's Pro Elite Training. It's a big red P when you get into the store, and it's Pro Elite Training. Download it. It is a free model. You'll get hundreds and hundreds of drills for free. The premium model is just $4.99. You can upgrade, and that unlocks all of our pro athletes, athletes such as Trey Burke from the Dallas Mavericks, or as Brandon Tate, the 12-year NFL vet from the Cincinnati Bengals and the Buffalo Bills. You can find those types of athletes right in Pro Elite Training. So back to you, though, Cole, as we're talking about these business owners, is that talk to me based on, and I want you to put your legal hat on, talk to me about how important it is for legal structuring for micro, small, and boutique businesses as they're getting out the gate.
Yeah, it's a great question. It's a question that doesn't typically get asked soon enough, Dr. Baker. And so I'm glad that you did. I'm glad that you did bring this up. And I'm glad you used the terms out the gate, because that's when ultimately we want to start making sure that we're structured correctly. So what you're referring to here is something we've spent a lot of time working on with a lot of patients. And it's a corporate structure discussion around, I'm getting ready to start that business, hopefully getting ready to. Sometimes it's, I just started this business, right? And that's okay too. But the question soon thereafter needs to be asked of, am I set up correctly? Okay. And what correctly means might be different depending on where you live or what type of business you're operating or what your objectives are or how you're financed. It can mean a lot of different things. The exercise that we go through at the business hospital is to understand all of those different nuances and then set the right structure for that business according to its needs and do that legally, soundly, and efficiently so that the entrepreneur or the founder can set that aside and now focus on their business. Now, I'll use a couple terms that probably everybody who's listening to this has heard. Most people have heard of an LLC, a limited liability company. A lot of people have heard of corporations. They certainly interact with both LLCs and corporations on a regular basis. Some people have heard of S-corps as compared to C-corps. All of these legal terms are essentially just names for types of entities that we're going to establish to do business with the world. Now, let me give a couple practical examples of what we're trying to accomplish when we do that. The first is risk mitigation. So, as an example, if I am I'm Cole and I am a power washer, right? And I've got my truck and I've got my power washing equipment and I'm going out and I'm power washing various different contracts, I'm running that business. If I don't form a legal business, then I'm doing that business as myself, as what's known as a sole proprietor. Or if I have partners, I might be doing it as a partnership. Well, let's say that in the course of my business, I do something wrong. Let's say I'm power washing a sidewalk and I didn't provide notice of that the sidewalk was going to be wet and somebody comes and slips and falls and hurts themselves. Or let's say that I'm power washing a super nice fancy house and I've got the power washer strength turned up a little too high and I strip off the side of the stucco of the house and it needs a major repair. Well, these are all risks the businesses take on. But in some cases, those risks are going to be pretty high liability. If you think about somebody getting hurt or a lawsuit being filed or a regulatory issue. When we establish entities, for instance, a limited liability company, we're attempting to limit the liability for the owner. So in a properly formed LLC. If I'm out power washing, there's a lot of nuance here, and I have to give the disclaimer. You know I have to give, Doc, to say I'm not giving any individual legal advice here. I don't know you. I don't know your situation. I can't give you legal advice. I'm just speaking in generality. If I have a properly formed LLC and I'm doing things right, then I can limit my personal liability. So what's that mean? If I've got an issue with a customer, with a client, with an employee that exposes my company to liability, the company should have that liability, but I don't want it personally. If I have to pay out a judgment, the company should have to pay out that judgment, and they might have to sell assets or tap their insurance programs in order to do that, but I don't want to lose my house, right?
But see, I want to say something here real quick, Cole, that you said that's vitally important that I think the listeners need to hear. You said the word properly multiple times. So is it proper if I just go to Frank LaRose and go to the Secretary of State and then put my name in a search and then say, I just registered my name? I'm good now, aren't I?
Well, probably not, okay? What you've done is you've started a process that is a multi-step process that requires you to do multiple things to be a properly formed entity in the state of Ohio. Now, some of these are very basic. Like, for instance, when I go to Frank LaRose's site and I sign up and I get my certificate, that's great. I've registered my name with the state, right? And they've confirmed that they have me on record. They know how to contact me through my registered agent. And I have rights to use that name as I go do commercial business with the citizens of Ohio. In that case, since you mentioned the Ohio Secretary of State's name. But there are other elements of the law that you have to abide by. So there's additional things that we would set up for you, everything from your corporate governance documents to working to procure a tax ID number to ensuring that you're set up properly with your banking system.
But see, check this out, though. Check this out, though, Cole, because you're naming some very important steps here, but I'm jumping in because do you have any idea the number of patients and potential patients that I speak with on a regular basis that are looking to cut costs in the realms of legal work only to set themselves up for high-level risk? I mean, talk to me about how you feel about that behavior when it comes to, I want to start a business, and I think I can do that for $22.
Well, look, business is about taking appropriate risks, right? And we all understand the concepts of risk versus reward. We also all understand that cash is king, especially at the beginning of a business. So, you know what? It doesn't even offend me that people would try to cut corners on the legal costs associated with it, with setting up the right way.
Now, well, I tell you what, now you said it doesn't offend you, but I'm going to put this in the atmosphere. It offends me when y'all do it. So if there's any listeners out there that say you want to cut corners at the beginning of your formation, I am now currently offended. Make sure that you don't do it, and that's bad.
Just because I said it didn't offend me, it doesn't mean I'm not judging you for it, okay? Because Here was the big adjective that I used when I started that. I said business is about taking appropriate risks. And in my opinion, even though I'm not going to be offended, everybody has the right to their own opinion. Everybody has the right to be wrong. Am I right, Dr. Baker?
Absolutely.
So if somebody wants to do it and do it wrong, no sweat, no problem with me. I'm busy. However, I do not think that cutting those corners represents an appropriate risk. Because what we're talking about, Dr. B, is a little bit of time and a little bit of money in the grand scheme of things to set this stuff up the right way. And that's going to properly mitigate all of your other risks in ways that you will not have. You will not have that mitigation if you don't do it right. So what would you rather have?
Well, look, I tell you what. Because, I mean, you were about to ask me a question that I'm already ahead of you on. And I promise you, listener world, he and I did not, you know, work this thing out as if we're some kind of duo or something. But I got hit with an international lawsuit that literally confused my entire attorney set, in which Cole Reynolds was one of those members. It confused me. It confused two different banks. It confused two of my accountants. So you've got probably seven doctorate level individuals working on one reality in which it confused all of us. The thing that saved me with this international litigation was how I was formed and how I was set up and all the internal controls that minimized my risk. That protected me. But that's because the investment came through from the beginning to make sure that all my structures were in place. And that's exactly what we're talking about now.
Yeah, so you'd feel silly if you rewound the clock and said, you know what? I want to save that few $100 of getting set up the right way back years ago when you did it that way, because, you know what, I don't want to make that investment now only to then get hit with that in a different world, in a different scenario several years down the road. And I'm familiar with that situation, and I admit I am one that was confused by it, because it was a complex scenario where, frankly, you didn't do anything wrong. But here you were in a scenario where it's like, man, Dr. Baker's going to end up holding the bag.
If you listeners, I want the listeners to know that that was a $350,000 bag I was going to hold. So when so Cole is being nice about what Dr. Baker's going to hold the bag, $350,000 is not a bag that anybody wants to hold. However, my legal protection allowed me to navigate that situation to minimize all the risks, where I came out on the other side essentially unscathed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's a great example of what we're talking about, Doc. So when we try to get people set up the right way from the beginning, it's because I don't have a crystal ball, no matter how long I've been doing this. I don't know if this is going to be a company that's going to operate for 30 or 40 or 50 years and never have a lawsuit, never have a regulatory issue, never have a claim brought against them, or if this is one that right around the corner is sitting this big bad wolf of legal liability that we need to be prepared for. Because of that, I would say everybody should take the small amount of resources that it requires in both time, money, energy, effort, and get themselves set up the right way in the right type of entity with all the right paperwork. And it's something we do. And here's the beauty of it then. You can go to bed at night in most instances focusing, because look, we're entrepreneurs, we've all lost sleep, right? We know what it means to be tossing and turning in the middle of the night working on your business when you would rather be sleeping. But here's the thing, I would rather you be working on that strategic marketing plan or that customer acquisition strategy or that new vendor relationship or that employee hire, because you're going to lose sleep no matter what. Isn't it better to be losing sleep on those things than losing sleep wondering if you're protected in the event that something bad happens?
Absolutely. And I tell you what, I make the argument that if you're not traditionally trained in a lot of these areas, that you make sure that a part of your thinking, and all you listeners, you'll hear me say this if you follow me long enough, there's a term called metacognition, which is the science of thinking about what you think about. So right now I'm imploring you to think about your thoughts and look at your business and say, hey, am I legally bunkered in, or do I have the right people helping me, even if it's just your CPA? Don't always TurboTax everything. Get the right CPA. Don't try to always, and I may catch fire, who cares? Don't try to LegalZoom everything. Get a human that is is classically trained in this, preferably one from the business hospital, but if not, get you one. And therefore work with them so you can understand the parameters of your business. These are what we call health metrics. And when people say, Doc, do you give treatment? Well, the answer is yes, I'm treating your mind as it relates to how you should operate this business in a way that keeps you healthier longer. And one way to literally destroy a business is to have legal woes. I mean, Cole, talk to us a little bit, just in your experiences, obviously no names given, but I'm sure you've seen companies that have been devastated or have closed and collapsed and cratered because of legal issues. Is that right?
Oh, for sure. And I can give example after example after example. But here's what we know, right? It takes an enormous amount of work and energy and effort and resources to make your business run, to make your business grow, and to make your business succeed, right? And the utilization of those resources is the most important thing to determine whether or not you succeed. Now, here's what we also know about legal woes. They are going to take your time, your attention, your effort, your brain space, your bandwidth. They're going to eat all of that up for far, far, far too long. Now, you take an entrepreneur, you take a manager, you take a business owner, and you force them to spend their resources, time, energy, money, in something like legal battles, guess where they're not expending their time and their energy and their money, Dr. Baker? They're not able to invest in their people, in their customers, in their products, in their services. So just by that in and of itself, you're going to see a downfall or a dip in the performance of your business if you're able to survive it. Now,
do you know how many people I've seen skip out on that aspect to buy another machine or to spend on more advertising? I think that's hilarious, and this is why I think it's actually funny, but not funny like in my tummy, but actually hilarious as this couldn't be a bigger error, is that you spend more on advertising and marketing because you think that's important, only to get more people at your business, which is creating more risk for you and increasing your burden of liability when legally you're not structured appropriately. Mm-hmm. Am I making sense there, yeah. Cole?
No, it is. I mean, you're talking about sort of expounding the problem, right? And actually accelerating your potential risk before you're set up to take it. So you know, the best story we kind of tell sometimes is that, hey, when we come through a litigation or we come through a legal battle or we come through a regulatory concern, there is no winner and there is no loser. Everyone's a loser, right? And even when we go to the entrepreneur and we say, hey, great news, you won that one, they go, yippee, because it doesn't feel like a win to them. Why? Because for the last 6 months or 8 months or a year, they found themselves in the throes of something that they never, ever wanted to experience. And it was distracting and it was costly. If you ask any of those clients, hey, if you could rewind the clock and take steps a little bit differently to protect you from running into these types of scenarios, or if this scenario presented itself, you would have had different options, every one of them would say yes, right?
But you do know that's the proverbial 2020, though. That's the classic Monday morning quarterback reality.
Everybody listening is at an advantage right now, right? Because let's hope that all of our listeners are in a position at this point in time to say, man, I don't want to be looking back with 2020 vision in hindsight saying I should have done it. Let's have a conversation now, right?
Mm-hmm. Have the conversation ahead of time. That way you look like you have a crystal ball that actually works. But why is that? Because some of these realities are known. And that's one thing that I tell a lot of my patients is that you don't come to me because I'm going to make you the most amazing thing in the world. What you come to me for is that I'm going to provide you with information that's known. It's just unknown to you. And because it's unknown to you, take what we know, take what we've done, and then use that. It's just like raising children. Cole, I know you have children. I have children. And I don't always know if what I'm doing for my daughters are the best, meaning that is it going to work out the way I want it to? I do know is that they're better with me than they are without me, and there's things that I can execute that are known that are going to put them in a better position. Well, looking at things from a legal standpoint is we don't know who's going to frivolously charge you with something. We don't know what random IP claim that you might have infringed on. What we do know is if you're set up properly, you'll be protected, and that is hindsight but foresight. Hence the reason why spiritually, Solomon tells us, my people die from a lack of vision. Well, if you don't have vision, then it's hard to know where you're going. Legally, have vision and protect your company, because you may not know where you're going, but at least you'll have covering as you travel and navigate.
Hey, I don't need to tell you to preach because you know you're preaching, right? But let me add something to this. We've been talking about the planning and the preparation that you can do legally to protect yourself in certain ways. We haven't even scratched the surface on the different ways that businesses are out there operating with risk that they might not even know. Let me ask you know how many businesses have employees and don't have a handbook?
Yeah, I know exactly. I want to give them the number, but almost every business I talk to does not.
You know how many employees are out there and they don't have their employees in appropriate non-competes and non-solicitations? So guess what happens after you feed all that knowledge and all that insight into your key manager and they grow to a point that they think they could do it themselves? You know, they are going to open up right next door. And oh, by the way, they're also calling every customer you ever had and trying to take them with them.
I mean, well, you know what's funny about that, Cole, is that happens so much. That's why companies don't train anymore. They say, why am I going to train you just for you to take what I gave you and use it for yourself or take it to somewhere else. I actually, no exaggerations, this morning dealt with that issue with a trucking company out of Atlanta. Is that they are upset that the trucks that they provided one driver, that driver went purchased their own trucks and did the same combination of work, even though one said that, I thought I let you know that this is what I was going to do. The other one said, you never told us this is what you were going to do. Now we have a hearsay battle, but the reality was you trained them to do the very thing that you're doing. They found out the differences in the pay scale, knew that they could duplicate the service. Why should they give you 85% for that? Now they go along and take it themselves, but guess what? Legally, you are not structured appropriately, which is going back to your point, Cole.
Yeah, so anytime we have a commercial interaction happening between business and customer, or business and employee, or business and vendor, there's going to be some level of risk, right? There's risk to having employees, there's risk to having customers, there's risks between you and your supplier. So what we try to do from a holistic perspective, the business hospital is going to say, look, we have to obviously start in the right spot, but then your business is going to grow. You're going to hire employees or independent contractors. You're going to sign strategic partnerships agreements with third-party entities. You're going to find vendors. You're eventually going to be selling something to somebody. All of those transactions have risk points that we know to look for because we've just been doing this for a long time, right? We know what could possibly go wrong. And we're going to set up and structure each one of those transactions with the appropriate safeguards so that we can mitigate those risks. I will never tell my clients that I'm eliminating the risk. You know why? Because if I tell them I'm eliminating their risk, I'm very likely eliminating their profits, right? We know that there has to be an amount of risk. But what I will tell my clients is we're going to mitigate the unhealthy risks or the unpalatable risks. And we're going to allow you to take the good business risks, right, that you need to do to find profit. But we're going to eliminate the ones that are not going to further that goal, right? And so that's an exercise that we're going to do. And, I mean, if I had a nickel for every time a client called me saying, hey, you know, I've got this problem with this employee, I'm going to have to let him go, or I don't understand. I mean, I think I might have to let him go. Do I have to pay him a severance? How do I calculate the money that they're owed? I mean, all these things. And I go, well, how did we paper the documentation? Well, I never did that. And I go, okay, well, we're up against a little bit of a battle now because
National Weather Service in Wilmington has issued a severe thunderstorm warning for Ohio County, Switzerland County, Carroll County, Southern Boone County, Northern Grant County, Northwestern Owen County, Gallatin County, until 3:30 p.m. At 2:41 p.m., a severe thunderstorm was located near Bedford, moving northeast at 50 miles an hour. Hazard, 60 miles an hour wind gusts. Source, radar indicated. Impact, expect damage to trees and power lines. Locations impacted include Carrollton, Williamstown, Rising Sun, Crittenden, Dry Ridge, Beeson, Warsaw, Florence, Kentucky Speedway, French, Glencoe, Fairview, Gibbs, Sanders, Fargo, Patriot, Worthville, Prestonville, Aberdeen, and Lyle. This includes the following interstates: I-71 in Kentucky between mile markers 39 and 75. I-75 in Kentucky between mile markers 158 and 166.
Might be diagnosing what type of agreement we need to form, and then we're getting that in place. Hey, last week you called me on one of these, right? You said, hey, we've got a client, we've got a patient, here's what they're looking at. They need to enter into some sort of agreement. We aren't even sure what to call that agreement, right? You remember this?
And I do.
Hey, I said, here's how we're gonna paper this. Here's how we're gonna call it. Here's what's gonna be enforceable. Here's what might not be enforceable. But regardless, at the end of this process, everybody is going to understand the obligations and expectations, right? And that's what we want. That's going to give us the best opportunity for success so we can just work on the business.
Absolutely. You know, and you think about how frequently these things take place, and we think, and I hate to even say it this way, but I know how people think. I hear it all the time. is these things just won't happen to me. Or I've known this person my whole life. Or there's no way they're going to do that because I've already filed with the state. And we say these things that are so just, they're just wrong. I don't know how to put it. They're wrong. They're bad. We should not behave in that way, but we haven't been told specifically that our behavior was unhealthy. And we find out that it's unhealthy the moment we find out that we have cancer. I need to break us for a moment just for another station identification. Remember, everyone, if you ever want to call into the show because you have legal questions, or like for today, we're talking about all matters of business law, or if you have any issues with your business, please don't hesitate to call the number. The number is 859-291-2255. We'll patch you right in. We'll answer any questions that you have right there on the spot. Our goal is to make sure that you're healthy. And as a reminder, this segment is brought to you by Pro Elite Training. Go to getproelite.com or go to Pro Elite Training in your Apple or your Google store to download it today for free. All right, Cole, let's go back in our last portion of this segment, and I want to switch gears just a little bit, and I want to talk about entrepreneurship, but I want to talk about it from a definition standpoint. So I kind of want to set the ground rules for the listeners. I'm going to remind you of this as we go along, but we consider small business as anything of $50 million and under, 500 employees or less, but a small business can encompass a host of business types. So a startup founder is a person that has an innovative concept, but it can still operate as a small business. That's why if anyone ever hears or sees that Uber is still considered a startup or Airbnb is considered a startup, even though they're a public company, that's because they created a concept that was disruptive in their industry. You also have micro and boutique businesses, mom and pop shops. So these include, you know, one or two employees, small brick and mortars, people that run business from home or online through e-commerce. That's where the language has to change. So as you're thinking about the things that we're talking about with your business, is when we say small business, we're universally covering things that are $50 million and under. Mid-sized businesses start to grow from there. And then large businesses are all the businesses you know. So if you're in the Cincinnati metro area like we are, that's your Procter & Gamble's, that's your General Electric's. Those are big business. So I want to transition real quick in the time that we have left, Cole, and talk about entrepreneurship a little bit. I know what I find in entrepreneurship, and your opinion would be very valuable to me, is that there are many people who quit their jobs because they hate their boss. And they say, I'm going to go do this myself. Or they were really good in their role at a particular company, and they say, well, I can do this role better than anyone else, so I'm going to create a company doing this role. Talk to me about that mentality. How have you seen that play out when you've had to structure these businesses, and what you think the success rate is when someone doesn't view their entrepreneurship in the right light?
It's a, you know, we saw what it, we were, they're referring to the last couple of years, the Great Resignation, right? I mean, we've heard of a record number of employees leaving, right? Now, we also know there's this gig economy, right? Gig economy meaning people who are working odd jobs. They're running their side hustles, right? They might just be making enough money to get them through the rest of the week, and then they're done with that gig, right? And they're moving around. I think what's interesting is we're watching the rise of certain businesses that are scaling so fast that they can't find talent, right? And these are some big companies that they truly can't even get bodies to stand there and do the job, right? And on and that is somewhat universal. Seems like everybody's kind of dealing with that. The question in my mind is what percentage of these folks that were part of the Great Resignation, right? Leaving the job, dissatisfied with the job. At what point are they going to come out, start their own businesses, build their own businesses, and go try to disrupt the industry that they left, right? I don't know the answer to that. And I think the reason why we don't know the answer to that is because that takes a lot of time. And here we are watching a record number of people resign from their jobs or leave their jobs. Are they working on things that are about to surface, right? Are they working on procuring funding for that startup that's going to go in force? Well, I don't know. I hope if they are doing that, they've taken the time to check their non-competes, They've taken their time to read that former employer's handbook. They probably acknowledged that they signed if their employer had one, and they're not being violative of any of those terms, and they're being responsible with any of the intellectual property of the company that they're leaving. But guess what? I'm pro-entrepreneur. I kind of hope that a lot of these people, Dr. Baker, are going out saying, you know what? I'm going to build a better mousetrap, or I'm going to skin the cat a little differently, and I'm going to come back out and start competing, because I think that competition breeds health within the industry. Am I wrong?
No, it does. I think the problem comes in the unhealthy metric is when they think that their one portion of the job is the job. So let me qualify that. So let's say that you were a finance manager at a dealership and you thought that the dealership didn't run their company or that dealership well, so you're going to leave and make a better dealership. Well, you were really good in that one space, but that doesn't make you good in all the other spaces. And so you can be even more deficient than you are adept at your position in all the other positions. And that's something that I see as an unhealthy metric regularly. However, the thought itself of having that passion and that fervor to say, you know what, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to participate in the space and make the space better, I do welcome that. But as long as it's looked at appropriately with having the right resources behind you, the right temperament, and recognizing that nothing is quick, it's all a slow build.
Hey, so those folks that are coming out, and I think you're exactly right. I'm really good at this one part of the process, so I must be able to do the entire process better, right? That's the mindset, right? And mm-hmm. we know that might not be accurate. What's the exercise then to help those people acknowledge where they have those deficiencies and at least start with identifying them, right? Because likely mm-hmm. there are resources out there for them, but I could see it being a problem even getting these people to acknowledge or know about what deficiencies are there so that they can go solve them. How do you do that?
Absolutely. You know, many times in a business, let's say you're an employee of a company and you continue to see something that's not working well. It might manifest where you are, but the problem may stem from a department that you've never been to. And you don't understand what's causing that bleed out into yours. And I see that regularly, hence the reason why when we talk about diagnosis, I always listen to the potential patient first to say, what do you think your problem is? But the more I probe, the more I find out that they have no idea where that problem stems from. They're just telling you the symptom of what's happening, but not really the core. And there's a lot of entrepreneurs that feel really good about being their own boss, but simultaneously, they don't really understand all the components that it takes in order to run a very well-run company. And that becomes really important. You mentioned something earlier before we got on air that I want to touch on for a few moments before we have to transition. We won't have enough time to deep dive into this, but we were just looking at the market and how the market's been down. Share with me or share with the listeners, if you will, some of your thoughts regarding what does this downturn or this economic downturn feel like and look like to the average person and to the business owner, and then what does that mean holistically for the economy?
Well, it's interesting because I get a viewpoint, a first-person viewpoint, at what I like to call a lot of the bets that entrepreneurs are placing, okay? So what I mean by that is if an entrepreneur comes to me or a business owner comes to me and says, hey, I want to buy a competitor, right? That's a bet they're placing, right? They're going to put mm-hmm. big money, big resources into that bet with the hope that it pays off and helps them grow. I see people saying, hey, it's time for me to invest huge. I've always been renting a space, but it's time to now build my production facility. That's a pretty big bet. So I see the types of bets that entrepreneurs are placing, and you can correlate them with the strength of the market. Now, I'm not just talking about the stock market, right? There's a lot of factors out there that have some business owners and entrepreneurs a little scared. The supply chain is very unhealthy right now. Lead times for products are exceedingly long. The workforce, we talked about how hard it is to find quality talent in the workforce. We've seen interest rates increases. We've seen cost of capital going up. We're seeing the stock market certainly dip and people are losing their retirements and their savings values. here's how that translates to what people are doing, in my opinion, Dr. Baker. They're placing different types of bets. Okay. So what I'm seeing right now is entrepreneurs asking themselves the questions, what are the smart bets to be placing? And what are the bets that feel too big right now? Right. So here's some things I'm seeing. Hey, it's time to invest in our internal marketing tools because preserving those customers feels more important than going out and getting new ones. It's time to invest in training because preserving my existing staff is more important than figuring I can always replace them with a healthy labor market. These are bets that are being placed because they cost resources and they need to see a payoff. But do you see how they're a little different than maybe they were even weeks ago? Not even months ago, but even weeks ago. The bets feel different to me. Are you seeing that as well?
Well, what I'm seeing on my side is actually patients being oblivious to the changes outside of being a consumer. So they'll recognize that in the Midwest, gas is nearly $5. Out on the West Coast, it's nearly $8. But they won't attribute that to, well, how does my price points have to change? How do my relationships with my current customer base have to change? Or what do I need to do to focus in to capitalize on things that I've already been good at because it's going to be difficult for me to generate new activity in this climate? Those are things that they are not paying attention to, but just simply as a consumer saying, it costs me more to get X item. Yeah, but if it costs you more to get X item based on the supply chain, on and on and on, what does that mean for your operation? And I'm not certain they're paying attention to that. But once again, that is the separator between savvy business owners and in some cases novice business owners, or dare I say traditionalists, meaning that I've always done something a certain way. I'm only going to do it that way. Even if everything around me changes to my detriment, I'm just going to stay the course. There are in some cases where you should behave like that, and there's other cases you shouldn't, but knowing when is the differentiator. And I'm not so sure they're paying attention to these metrics at a level that allows them to keep a healthy level of their work. But I think it's really important that you brought that up because as business owners, we have to pay attention to everything that may affect our business. And so bringing up what the market looks like is a direct effect on small micro boutique business owners as to how they're going to offer everything from their produce. If, let's say, they're a farmer, to where do they get their apparel from? Like, for an example, I have a lady that I'm going to bring on the show here soon about her garments. Can't wait to have her on the show. She's going to be wonderful. But her garments are already high priced, and now that price has increased because of what's going on in the supply chain. And so how does she have to maneuver her business in order to bear that weight? I think that's a fantastic point that you bring up, Cole.
Look, every single listener who has a business or is thinking about business, every single one, your business is being affected and is going to continue to be affected by what we see in the market. Full stop. Every single business. Your customer has changed. The dynamics of their daily lives as they drive to work and go to the grocery store have changed. Their decision.
But you know what's funny about that? You know what's funny about that, even in our short time, I think we got about a minute and a half, is that you know how many business owners will tell me that they don't pay attention to the market or that they don't pay attention to politics? And I'm saying don't ignore the stuff because emotionally you feel some kind of way about it. You need to pay attention to it because it all affects your business. Tax implications, what things get voted in and out of policy, what happens overseas, all of these realities affect your business in some form or fashion regularly. So I think the advice or the recommendation, and actually everyone listening, I call those prescriptions. So this prescription that we're writing you right now is that you have to pay attention to what's going on in this world, and you have to do it in a very intentional and deliberate way so that you know how to pivot. And things that you don't understand is why you need to have a professional that does understand these realities on your side so that they can help navigate these understandings with you and for you. So, Cole, we're under a minute now. So, once again, I just want to thank you so much, not only for pushing us to move forward in this endeavor, but number two, joining us today and then giving the information, just the valuable, valuable resources that you provided to the listeners. I want
the listeners
to know.
Thank you for joining us for Doctor's Orders. You can contact Dr. Baker by phone at 1-855-249-4677, by email at info@drbaker.us. You can learn more on our website at www.drbaker.us. Be sure to tune in every Monday through Friday at 2 p.m. right here on 1320 AM, 103.9 FM, and on www.1320thevoice.com.